Welcome to APCDA Podcast Season 5. And today we have with us Jonathan, our guest for today, for episode 7. So Jonathan has what I call a portfolio career in the best sense of term. His journey is a masterclass in like applying core skills across different industry. For over 20 years, he has been working with major tech and healthcare brands like Apple, Visa, before taking his skills to the world of art, leading strategy, digital strategy at the Asian Art Museum of San Francisco. He's also a dedicated educator, having taught everywhere to K-12 gifted programs. He now brings all the experience advising entrepreneurs and mentoring professionals on finding their purpose through empathy and design thinking. In fact, I feel like my introduction of Jonathan may not do him justice. So I'd like to invite Jonathan to share with us a little bit more about who you are as a person, deep down. What fascinates you? What drives you, Jonathan?
Oh, hi Samantha. Thank you again for having me. I think you did a really great job of introducing me. I think within the 20 years of technology experience, I did a lot of different roles. I started in engineering. I started as a webmaster back in the late 90s when that's what everybody did. You learned a little bit about a design and development, managing your hours and started making websites. And then I started doing that in the agency world. I think along the way, I kind of had the itch to change my career path. Here and there. I did engineering. I went into product design. I was consulting for a little bit too. Everything allowed me to kind of see all the different ways that you work with teams, collaborate across departments, but also how do you lead different members of the team. So that was something that I felt kind of was part of my journey. I think you mentioned my move into the Asian Art Museum and that digital strategy there. I saw it as an opportunity to kind of bring that consulting mindset or the big tech mindset to a nonprofit organization, right? That was trying to get its feet wet with digital. So I really looked at bringing my perspective there. And along the way, I think I was deeply affected by learning about the different visitors, all the accessibility and inclusivity we had to implement because we were working for the city of San Francisco. I think that kind of had me really think less about the technology and more about kind of the experiences and solutions we wanted to create for our users there. That's the place where also I met my wife, my life partner, and she kind of saw something that I didn't really see in myself, which was everywhere along the way in my roles, I was doing a lot of education and teaching, but I never really focused full time in the classroom. It was always something that I had done adjacent to my career, and if that was something that I wanted to do. And that's when I kind of took the leap into getting a master's in education and teaching in the elementary school classroom, which I did before moving to Singapore, where I continued my career not teaching in the gifted classroom, but I started to teach adult learners at General Assembly. I got to take all of my different skills I learned from the 20 years of my career, and I brought that into the classroom. Teaching user experience design, presentation design, communication, but also really stressing the idea of having the right growth mindset, whether that's resilience, adaptability, critical thinking, all kinds of different types of habits of mind to be successful alongside your hard skills. So,
Wow, that is a lot of action. Almost every other time, there's a lot of reinvention that I'm witnessing here as well. I'm curious, like, what drives you to do all this reinvention? Because most of the time, people might be very comfortable with what is already there, and the desire to change may not be as strong, but you are constantly changing, you're constantly innovating on your own career. How do you manage to do that? What drives you?
To tell you the truth, Samantha, I was pretty stuck in a career for almost for 20 years, from my early 20s to my 40s, early 40s. I think I didn't have a lot of movement. When I changed to different departments, when I was from design to engineering to leadership, I saw those as really big moves. But in the grand scheme of things, because I was working in technology, with very, across different agencies. Maybe my clients changed, but my roles and responsibilities, but not my thinking about reinvention or transformation. I think those are things that have happened to me in the last 5 years. And a lot of that, I think, was really spurred by becoming a trailing spouse for my wife when we moved to Singapore for her career, and then having to reinvent myself in a new country, try to figure out where I fit specifically within this kind of education, technology, coaching place that I wanted to create. So I think a lot of the change I can kind of feel more comfortable with because I have a really supportive partner. I think that's one big thing. I think the other thing too is it took me a while to say that I had enough in my life. I think one of the big things that I feel has changed since in my early 40s when I went to the museum was this idea of really working for my personal profit and gain. I was obsessed with this idea of working in agencies and making a lot of money and surrounding myself with all kinds of different gadgets and the nicest clothes. I always needed more and more. If my parents or friends ever asked me what I was wanted to be in success, it's always material based. I think it got to a certain point when I kind of had to grow up in my relationship and really think about I actually had more than enough. I had the support of my friends, my family, my wife. I made enough money to have a comfortable lifestyle. So since I've kind of hit that area of enough and more is not necessarily focused on me, more is about doing things for others, I think. So I think when you going back to your original question, Samantha, what kind of keeps me going with all of this change? I think it's that ability to feel that I'm enough and that there's so much more I can do for adult learners, for young professionals, for people in the world. So I think that's what kind of keeps me moving.
Wow. And on that note, right, maybe you can share with us currently what are you embarking on? What kind of problems are you solving? Tell us a little bit more about what you love to do.
Yeah, I think, yeah. One of the things that I think, I'd mentioned teaching in the classroom to a lot of different age groups. I do love teaching, but more than the teaching, I really love that coaching aspect of things. I think that's something that I really have really valued, and I really like working with people in different career spaces and in different ages and really helping them figure out what are their personal values and what is their personal purpose in life and how do you move toward that. I think one of the things that I love to think about is this idea of I remember when I was younger that I thought my career was going to be a linear path. It was just going to be this one mountain that you continue to climb. And I've realized it's a series of mountains, right? It's a series of you go up and then you come down, you go up and come down. And I have kind of really thought about all of those different moments in my life and moments in other people's lives. And I'm really trying to find opportunities to help people as they start scaling a particular challenge. So I think for me now, returning back to the United States, where I've been for the last month, I'm looking more into doing the coaching for individuals and trying to figure out for myself, what is that? I guess, what is that? What is the way I want to position that for others? So how do I articulate that as my brand, so to speak?
Okay, you mentioned a very big word, which is called purpose. So very purpose-driven and helping individual to find their path as well. Can you share a little bit more about what do you mean by purpose? How do we find our purpose?
I know a lot of people really talk about purpose a lot. And another word that I think about with purpose is conviction. I think that's something that is really required to have purpose. And I know a lot of students in the past have asked me how, when they speak to me, they realize I've got a lot of conviction when it comes to the way I think about the world. And where do I get that from? And I think that all comes from really having a strong sense of personal values. And I think that's something that I always talked about in my life, but I never really understood or embodied them in a particular way. So I think it was really starting to think about what are the main values that drive me. And if you have those particular values, then you have conviction in terms of how you make decisions in life. So I think once you have that conviction and the values, then you can lead to that purpose, or you have no doubt this is what you need to be doing. So it's values leading to conviction, leading to purpose.
Wow. Well, now that you break it down like that, it does makes a lot of sense, because a lot of time when people think about purpose, is this big grand word, like how do I achieve my purpose? If I don't know my purpose, I don't do anything. And you just break it down that it's a form of conviction, and conviction comes from personal values. So the part about personal values of self-clarity is very important in this process, sounds like it.
And I think that's the hardest thing for us to do, Samantha, is really that self-clarity. One of the biggest lessons that I learned when I was teaching first grade is we taught a lot about personal identity. So all of the things we really wanted to do was we wanted to teach students at a very young age to celebrate their identity, right? That's racial identity, national identity, what their interests are, what their abilities are, every different thing that defines us and makes us who we are. I think that particular DNA. And I would say that for myself, I just turned 50 and grew up in the 80s and 90s, where as a Chinese American, I was my own without role models. I mean, we didn't have a lot of Chinese culture or Asian culture as much as you see today in the popular media. It was a journey that I took primarily on my own, and being one of the only Chinese Americans at school for a long time, it was really difficult for me to find that sense of identity. So I think for me, the ability to understand my own personal values was actually kind of spending a lot of hard time thinking about how much I tried to shed my identities, right? As a Chinese American who liked video games and read comic books, I wanted to be the cool kid, right? I wanted to be the kid with the leather jacket and the piercings and the tattoos, which I did all of that. But at the end of the day, I shed those all again. And I'm back to the comic books, the music, and the video games, and all of that. But yeah, I think that was the really tough thing for me to do. But a lot of that started again for me, at least that journey towards understanding my identity and values from teaching young kids and having them put them in touch and help them celebrate it for themselves. I couldn't help but do that myself as well, too.
Yes, you talk about personal values, personal identity, and a little bit about your background as a child. So I was just thinking about, would you be able to share with us a little bit about your family background, what kind of child you were, and how did it shape you to be who you are today? Because there was that journey that you briefly mentioned just now.
So, as I mentioned, I'm a Chinese American. I'm second generation Chinese American. My dad was born in San Francisco, and my mom moved to San Francisco from Hong Kong when she was very young. So, they both grew up in San Francisco's Chinatown area. And when they met each other, both in their early 20s, I think they had a desire to start a family outside of Chinatown. So, they moved to the suburbs, and they were the first Chinese family to move to the suburbs on the peninsula in a city named Millbrae, where we now it's, I think it's 60% Asian, if not more. But at the time, an interesting thing my parents did was they felt that it was important for me to assimilate to American culture rather than acculturate. So I grew up just being an American kid speaking English. They did not need me to learn Cantonese. I didn't have to go to Chinese school. They really thought that the best advantage for my sister and I was to just be American. And that kind of actually put us at a more of a disadvantage, because I guess they always talk about the first time we understand our own identity is really powerful. For me, it was in high school when other Asian kids, Chinese and Korean and Japanese kids, told me I wasn't Asian enough to hang out with them. I was too American. So it was just really weird that I looked a particular way, but I was also rejected by other Asian kids for not being Asian enough. So I fell in the middle. I was not quite Asian enough, not quite American enough. So I was kind of had this identity which was in the middle. And I think that was something that I didn't talk about with a lot of people because I didn't know what to call it. I didn't have a name, but it was something that I held with me through college and through my adult life. And it really did shape some of the challenges that I had in growing up, or some of the different anxieties and frustrations that I went through, all kinds of different things, work, professional life, personal life, social life, et cetera. So that's kind of my journey. But that was something that I had to address and figure out. It just happened to me a lot later, I guess in my late 30s, early 40s. And I'm trying to make up for a lot of lost time now, which is really great that I have made this shift in my career towards something more meaningful and purposeful for myself.
Thank you so much for sharing. I think it definitely is not an easy journey. I can imagine the struggle, the And I can also see how it ties in so closely to you, that personal identity, embracing it is so important, and being in a space whereby you can educate and mentor and coach individuals in that space so that they can ultimately find what is purposeful and meaningful for them. It's so important to you and what drives you. Now I can see how the dots are connected. So thank you so much for being so vulnerable on this episode with us. So I would like to understand, how do you get started in your career?
I accidentally got started in my career. When I went to college, I had this idea that I wanted to be a high school teacher. I had taken my senior year, I had a Greek mythology class, and we started studying sculpture and poetry. And it was something that I really wanted to do. I was like, oh my gosh, it would be really great to become a teacher one day and teach all of these things alongside some of my favorite artists and musicians. And when I went to tell my mom about that, she said, "You're not going to be a teacher like many Asian parents." She said, "You're going to be a lawyer, engineer, or doctor. Those are the three options." I went to college, and when it was time to declare a major, I decided that I wanted to study literature and art, mostly because the science department was pretty boring, and my literature instructors were really dynamic, really passionate about what they're doing, and it was very infectious with me. So I studied literature and art, and at the time, my roommate showed me the World Wide Web. This was back in 1994. He was like, "Hey, have you seen this?" And I got to see some of the first websites ever built, and I was fascinated. And I decided that I wanted to learn how to build websites. I started doing my art around digital art. So I did Photoshop. I learned Photoshop one. I taught myself HTML. By my senior year, I was making websites for different college organizations. And that's what I decided to do when I graduated. I became a webmaster or an engineer at that time, and I started making websites. So that's how my journey started. Always wanted to teach that Greek mythology in the back of my mind. And I finally had a chance to do that years
It's
later.
coming back. Yeah, it's coming back.
But at the time, yeah, it was just something, it was a hobby that I took up. And it gave me something to do as soon as I graduated from school, and it lasted 20 years.
Interesting. Interesting how your mom wants you to be part of the American culture, but she still has the Asian mindset that you have to
Yes.
be either a doctor, lawyer, or engineer.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, interesting. Now, what is the most important career decision to date that you have taken? Because you have done so many pivots
Yeah.
along the way.
When I was teaching at the first grade, I had an opportunity to attend a design thinking workshop where the guest speaker was David Kelly, who's the founder of IDEO and design thinking overall. And one of the things he said to everyone there was he was in his 60s and he had been meeting with a lot of his other friends who were all in their late 50s, early 60s, and they meet for lunch every week. And he said that they've all been at the twilight of their careers, and they all share a very similar regret. The regret is that a lot of them have been in creative fields, but they stayed doing art direction or video editing or writing their entire careers, and they never really tried different creative expression. So when David talked to them, they're like, "Yeah, I've been doing this for so long. I wish I tried music. I wish I tried drawing. I wish I tried graphic design." And he said that that was a regret that so many people had. He wondered if they ever really, truly tried to find their professional fit. So he encouraged all of us to really think about what our true professional fit is. And from there, I was teaching in the classroom, a traditional K-12 classroom. While that is a classroom, I thought back, and when I was working at the museum, I had a classroom with the board of directors trying to teach them about what digital transformation was. There are a lot of non-traditional classrooms. Coaching is a classroom in a way, right? So there's a lot of different types of classrooms. And for me, since that conversation with David Kelly, I've been trying different. I put myself in different classrooms. I put it in adult learning classrooms, conference rooms, boardrooms, with my startup advising, with my leadership coaching. I've tried different versions of teaching and education to see which was the right fit for me. And I honestly think that the leadership coaching is where my fit, I feel, is the right fit for me. That can obviously change, Samantha. But right now, I think that for me, that idea of fit was probably the most powerful piece of advice I've had in my career about thinking about what I should do.
Definitely. Because I think the, at least for me, when I hear you speak about it, I think the fear of regret sometimes drives me. It's not the success that drives me, but the fear of having regrets that I didn't try anything is really very scary. And then, yeah, the ability to have the courage to try to find your true fit. And true fit can change based on your season in life as well, right? And you talk about at this point in time is teaching leadership. And leadership is a very broad term because I don't think that leadership is just restricted to boardrooms. Like leading yourself, putting on that CEO hat for your own life is also a form of leadership as well.
Yeah, I think when I was in business school, I was taking a leadership class and the professor asked, how would you define leadership? And I raised my hand and I said that leadership is making a decision when no one else is willing to do it. And I think that leadership is being decisive, and sometimes we have to be decisive for other people, but we also have to be decisive in our own lives. And I think to your point, I think when we're coaching individuals rather than organizations, it's really teaching people on how to have that decisiveness, right? Again, moving back to their identity and their values, right? And this is what I need to do. So I think you're right.
What's next for you, Jonathan, now that you have just recently shipped back to the US?
I've been someone who feels that if you put yourself in the right situations, everything in life happens. I think that's something that I really miss because I'm such a social person. I used to go out all the time, and since the pandemic, we all stay home. On top of that, we all use screens a lot. I'm excited. I'm in a new city. I'm living in Baltimore now. It's a city I never visited until I moved here 3 weeks ago. But it has a lot of the energy and the spirit of San Francisco when I lived there in the late 90s and Oakland in the 2000s. So it's very community focused. There's a lot of pride that people have. And I want to figure out how I can contribute to the actual community itself. I've done a lot of online community work, obviously, and technology. I've built things for online communities, but I really haven't done a lot for a physical community, whether that's working for an arts organization again or working for another nonprofit. There's leadership nonprofits here. I'm going to just see what I can do on the ground here, outside, completely out of technology. I think that there's a lot that I've learned over the last few years that I draw a lot of my understanding of organizations through a technology lens, right? And in order to have technology changes, you have to change the culture. So all of that together, I think it's leading me to just think about organizations and how do you lead organizations with that understanding of behavior change and how technology empowers people and the design thinking part, the intrinsic motivation that people have to come to work, to contribute to work, to make a difference. I think those are all the things that I'm going to try to do, but hopefully in a local organization here where I can walk to the office and see people in real life. That would be great.
In real life. Okay, I got that. Interesting. Okay. All right. It sounds really idealistic. And since you're on this point, I just like to pick your brain a little bit. I'm just want to think out loud. What would be a ideal world for you? You're doing a lot of ground up initiative, focusing on community building, also educating the senior leadership on empathy, design thinking, human-centric work.
I think at the end of the day, I want to see people care, right? For some reason, I feel like it always comes back to me when I'm in the classroom and I'm teaching learners. Most of the time, I notice people don't care to give a good effort in what they're doing, right? That's usually the reason why students don't do well. So I think at the end of the day, Samantha, I just really want to see people care for what they're doing. Whether they're taking a course, whether they're leading an organization, whether they're looking to make a change in their life. I think for whatever reason here, that lack of care for themselves, care for others, care in how they do things, I think that's something that we can all do a lot more of. So if I can somehow have those conversations with others or work with other people to find that within themselves or to motivate them to do that. I think that would be my key performance indicator.
I get it. And I'm really on you on this, really seeing that people care for what they are doing, how they are treating other people, rather than being so self-centered. I think the world would be a lot kinder, a better place as well.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that it's going from me to we, right? I think so much of our focus, and if I bring that back to the first 20 years of my career when I was more driven for money and profits, it's that's all about me, right? When we care, we can start giving to others. We can start focusing on the we, right? And I think that's something that would be wonderful if we could all just give a little bit more we or give a little bit more care to others in the world. I think it would be a lot better place for all of us.
I think so too. I really love it coming from me to we. It's such a techie tech line. You have to use it. If not, I will start using it and copyright from you. Thank you so much. Maybe before we
Yeah.
conclude the session, I would just like to ch ask you as well, what would be the best career advice you have been given or you would like to share?
Yeah, I think one of the things that early on, and I had mentioned that it took me a while to make that big change in my life, right? It's all changed in the last 6 years or so, was the idea of sacrifice. I think that career change will require a sacrifice. I went from a director of technology to an associate teacher. I think that a lot of times, at least for me, when I was making a lot of changes, I needed to have a title change, right? I could make shifts in my career, but it had to be a commensurate title change. It had to lead me somewhere else. So I needed to make sure that I didn't drop in my stature or drop in my salary. And it wasn't until I made that dramatic shift and accepted that sacrifice in salary and title and position that I was actually able to make the changes I needed to. I had to listen again. I had to work myself up from the bottom. I had to understand what it felt like to be junior or associate again after being the loudest voice in the room. I didn't have anybody listening to me in a room. But I think that sacrifice for me was a title change. It was money. For other people, it could be a lot of other things. But in order to actually really move towards purpose and figure out why you do things and what it is that you should do when you find your fit, I think you really need to really hit that reset button, which requires a lot of change, a lot of mindset changes, openness to embrace different things. And unless you're able to do that, I don't think that change that you can make could be that substantial, be very incremental, not transformational. So I think that's something maybe that people can think about, that it's okay. It's okay to start over. It's okay to hit reset. Our parents might not want us to do that unless you're going to become an engineer, a lawyer, or a doctor. But you do sometimes, if you do hit that reset button, then you can really free yourself of any expectations or conditions and just get back down to what it is and why it is that you want to do in this world.
When you were just talking about this sacrifice and hitting the reset button, I have a visual, and the visual is a person being dismantled like a Lego set. You are like being dismantled.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, at the same time, you are able to rebuild back yourself into a better version or a version that you feel happier about or more at peace with. So that was the image that came to my mind when you talk about the big word called sacrifice and hitting the reset button.
Yeah, there's a book that I really love called The Second Mountain by David Brooks. And he talks about a lot of the journeys we go on this road towards purpose are catalyzed by some moment in our life, right? It's a moment that really has us question everything we've tried to build our success on. And he says you can either be broken from this moment or broken open. So that's a way to think about it, is when we're broken open, we hit that reset, right? And we just can start to think about what it is that we need to do to start that journey again. So I think in a way, you can think about it as that, about being broken open into the possibilities, broken open to something special versus just broken and not able to get up from those changes in life.
Yeah, in fact, I think the Japanese even have an art for it. They call it like they call that even if you're broken, the imperfection is what that makes it perfect as well. So broken doesn't sound like a bad word in this context also.
No,
Yeah.
yeah, not at
Okay.
all.
Wow. Thank you so much, Jonathan. I am so inspired. You give me so much energy, so much more hope in embarking on the work that we do together, in this journey. And I can't thank you enough for your time and your insights. And I hope that, and I just wish you all the best in your next phase of journey. I really believe that with your experience and with your desire and your passion and the heart to impact, I think a lot of people will really get a lot of value from interacting and working and learning from you. So thank you so much for being here with us today, and I will see you soon.